Welcome, folks, to The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher. Every week, diving deep into the truth of Catholic social teaching and restoring all things in Christ. The Uncommon Good, live from Iowa Catholic Radio's Mercy Live Up Studios.
The Uncommon Good is on the air. I'm Bo Bonner.
This is Chris Kringle Bud Maher.
Chris Kringle Bud Maher. We are coming to you from the month of December. Bud, yeah. Did it finally snow in Pittsburgh, and that's why you said that?
It's snowing right now. We're walking in a winter wonderland. It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. Feeding two birds with one scone.
I'm glad PETA's new replacement for sayings that kill animals showed up in the intro of our show. Well, Bo Bonner and Bud Maher coming to you at places both with snow on the ground. I'm here in Des Moines, Iowa, where I am broadcasting live with the crew at Iowa Catholic Radio's Mercy Live Up Studio. I'm the director of the Zeta Institute for Foundation and Ethics and Leadership and the director of Mission and Ministry at Mercy College of Health Sciences. You can find us at zetainstitute.com and mchs.edu. Bud, what are you doing in that with the silver bells ringing around Pittsburgh?
I'm the director of the National Institute for Newman Studies. You can check us out at newmanstudies.org. We also have the Newman Reader, which is a collection of all of Newman's works. But it's easy to give PETA a hard time. I have to give them credit. Like when they posted that on Twitter yesterday, it reminded me like how many of our metaphors and analogies are about killing animals. So if anything, it's kind of challenged me to be creative with I'm trying to come up with animal metaphors that are all about, you know,
Kindly. I actually think the further south you go, there's even more dead animal references. I realize that in Iowa, I still get looks when I say you can't swing a dead cat without hitting a blank. So, like, I'm like, you can't swing a dead cat without hitting a Starbucks, right, because there's so many. And people are like, why are you swinging a dead cat? And I'm like, it's Oklahoma. Things happen. I don't know.
Well, some of these. So, like, bring home the bacon. I can see why, you know, they want us to say bring home the bagels, but like,
no bacon. Sorry.
Be the test tube instead of be the guinea pig.
Yeah.
It just doesn't have the same ring. Be the test tube.
No, there's just stuff that, you know, it has rhetorical power. Bring home the bacon is a wonderful thing to do. I bring home bacon, and my children erupt into glorious praise. But I have to admit that they do like bagels, and actually, if I brought home donuts, they would probably be even happier. But I don't know. But people get worried about stuff, and at the top of the hour, we feel like it's our job to let our listeners know what one weird segment of Twitter is actually worried about.
Well, yeah. If you bring home the bagels, you're not only, I guess, saving an animal's life, but it's also kosher, so that's feeding two birds with one stone.
Feeding two birds with one stone.
I was going to say kill two birds with one stone, but that stopped me. Yeah,
we should probably like show up on our internet feed. We should show the buck that our friend Mark Sheevy got over the weekend, where he pointed out even a sort of converted city boy like him could track the deer down, because when you shoot a deer in snow, it's easy to track them. I'm thinking PETA would not appreciate those pictures very much.
Oh, man. Well, I'm ready to have some live conversations about the deer population, because over Thanksgiving, my family drove from Pittsburgh to Omaha and back, and we saw deer everywhere. And right outside of Indianapolis, there was a police car stopped in the interstate, like in the left lane.
Uh-huh.
I came up on him pretty quickly, but he was removing a deer carcass. And I thought to myself, like, I said a quick prayer for law enforcement, because, you know, there's already enough danger that comes with the job, but they actually have to stop in the middle of the interstate and pull deer carcasses aside.
Yeah, in Iowa, it's not only can you kill two birds with one stone, but if you could get, like, five or six deer with one stone, you'd be doing a public service.
Thank you, Mark Sheevy.
Speaking of public service, Bud, if you needed to print out, for instance, either the ways you were going to change phrases, or if you were going to do the math problem about how many deer per person you need to kill in order to thin the herd out, you can go to Cartridge World, 801 73rd Street, Windsor Heights, and buy new printer ink for every time we point out someone who had to remove a deer carcass from an Iowa road.
Yeah, in all seriousness, you know, every time I've been at Cartridge World or talked to folks there, I've just been struck by their friendliness. It's great to have local people that we know running, you know, businesses out in the community. So love Cartridge World.
And then also Mercy College of Health Sciences, mchs.edu. Next week is finals. And, you know, there's the hard work, the preparation that goes into that. People graduating, getting ready to take their board exam so that they can get out to the community. We also have orientations, right, because we have people who start in spring. I got to speak at that and pray with them yesterday. There's a lot going on. It's not, you know, spring might be coming up hard for you to get things going, but we are already looking for a summer start and especially for fall. So like we said, mchs.edu, make sure to give someone a message if you'd like more information.
Well, Bo, one cool thing this time of year is we teach that class on servant leadership, and for me it's always fun to hear the stories of the students out in the community and how they impacted the community, but also how they were impacted by their time doing service learning.
Well, speaking of people who've impacted our lives, the guest we have today, Dr. Leroy Huizenga, he was getting his PhD when Bud and I were both at Duke Seminary. Bud, did you ever have him as a preceptor?
I didn't, and you know, but our good friend Jonathan Kelly did, and yeah. I know he really loved like Leroy's knowledge of the Bible. I heard he was a tough preceptor, so
yeah.
We might have to put him on the spot.
I got quite a few B's from the man, but certainly he knows his stuff. He is a grand poobah up in University of Mary, but he has a new book out called Loosing the Lion, Proclaiming the Gospel of Mark, and that's who we'll be talking with after these messages. There we go. I thought maybe PETA was like messing with the eagle screech.
That one sounded dangerous. I ducked at that first one. It sounded like he was swooping.
Give me some scones.
If you have suggestions, we already got one. Someone goes, what are we supposed to do with fish in the barrel? Which I agree. I don't know what dry good or non-animal product you would want in a barrel to fish out. But
yeah.
Regardless, if you have more witty comments or anything like that, or if you're PETA complaining about us talking about it, you can always use the Zip Whip line. 515-223-1150, 515-223-1150, the Zip Whip line. Let us know what you're thinking. We'll be back after these messages.
Food, water, and sanitation are basic necessities of life and a daily struggle for millions of children in South Africa like Caribou. Blessman International works to provide basic necessities to these children. Caribou is 9 years old. She must walk a mile to get water to drink. She walks further to take a liter of water to school each day for the school cook to prepare lunch for her and her fellow schoolmates. Blessman International helps provide the basic necessities of life for the children in Limpopo, South Africa. Learn more at blessmaninternational.org.
Are you struggling with drugs or alcohol? Have the same old programs led you to the same old places? Welcome to St. Gregory Recovery Center, the new standard for recovery. St. Gregory is a faith-based program located just outside of Des Moines. Our unique non-12-step approach is different than most other programs. We're designed to help you strengthen your body, mind, and spirit. Don't let your addiction define you. It's time to get you excited about life again. For more information, on the phone, 888-724-3342. That's 888-724-3342.
Support for The Uncommon Good is provided by Cartridge World. Cartridge World is an industry leader delivering high-performance printing products that help you save time, money, and print great.
Perfect for businesses, home offices, college students, or busy moms trying to find affordable printing supplies including ink, toner, paper, or printers. For business customers, pickup and delivery are available. Products are guaranteed or full replacement.
Cartridge World, your low-cost, environmentally friendly printing experts, 801 73rd Street in Windsor Heights, 515-564-7400, and online at cartridgeworld.com.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray Guarendi here from EWTN's The Doctor Is In. Good Lord permitting, I will be joining Iowa Catholic Radio for their dinner in December, Friday, December 7th, at the Embassy Suites downtown. And if you pay a little extra, I might even share a parenting tip or two. They won't be very good. I have to see how much you paid. Iowa Catholic Radio's dinner in December is Friday, December 7th at the Embassy Suites downtown. Find more information about tickets at iowacatholicradio.com or 515-223-1150. Hope to see you.
We're back with The Uncommon Good. Bo Bonner, Dr. Bud Maher. And we have with us today, like we said, Dr. Leroy Huizenga. He is the Associate Professor of Theology, Administrative Chair of Human and Divine Sciences at the University of Mary in Bismarck, North Dakota, but also the author of a new book, Loosing the Lion, Proclaiming the Gospel of Mark. Leroy, thank you for joining the show.
Well, thanks for having me.
Now, Bud and I were talking about this. He never had to have you as a preceptor at Duke. I did. Some of our buddies did. And you were a popular one, even though you were a tough but fair grader. And I wonder if now that I told you that, you might want to like print that out and put that up on your wall.
Yeah, perhaps.
No,
perhaps.
No, yeah, that didn't sound too enthusiastic. So I guess the first thing to ask when someone writes a book, and you know, if people follow you like we do on Twitter, on Facebook, people really do love this book. They love the ability for it to both talk about how it is that we should read the Bible better, but specifically with the Gospel of Mark, how one might preach with it, how one might use it to instruct people. I guess the question is, what is it about the book of Mark out of the four Gospels that a New Testament scholar like you decided, this is the book that I want to write for, I would say, a more popular audience beyond the academic sphere?
Yeah, I think Mark is the most misunderstood of all the Gospels, and it's kind of lived its life, as it were, under the shadow of Matthew. Right, for a long time, since Augustine, people thought Mark was just kind of a summary of Matthew, you know, who kind of shortened things and just crammed it all together. And actually, Mark is a brilliant, fascinating, ironic, even quirky story. You know, so if a person's into you know, movies or TV shows with, you know, plot twists and Easter eggs and foreshadowing and flashbacks and all these really fancy literary dynamics, then, you know, Mark would be the gospel for you. He's so creative and brilliant, but most people haven't been taught to read the Gospels as, you know, fascinating stories, so they miss all this. And so I have been working, you know, my whole life on Mark, falling in love with it when I was in college under the tutelage of a wonderful professor. And, you know, I begin to see, you know, the crazy, beautiful, brilliant things Mark was doing on a story level, and I thought, well, I've just got to, you know, write this in a book that'll be accessible to priests, preachers, practicing Christians, you know, so they can see what Mark is doing. You know, most of the time, people just kind of read a passage in isolation, right? You know, here's a story of Jesus and the woman at the well, or Jesus feeding the 5,000, or Jesus healing this person, and they never get around to setting it in the wider context of a gospel story. And when you put the little stories in the context of the big story, you get to see brilliant things happening.
Now, Leroy, just real quick for the audience, you're talking about you. Richard Hayes is who you study with Mark with?
Yeah, at Duke, Richard Hayes is my doctor father, and I did a little bit on Mark there. When I was at Princeton Seminary, I had a professor named Don Jewell who was just fascinated with Mark, and until I wrote my book, I think wrote the best book on Mark ever written.
Oh, there you
and,
go.
Yeah, how about that? And then back in my college, I had an undergrad mentor, James Edwards, who was working on a book on Mark, a commentary, and taught me and others how to read Mark and how to love Mark. So every stage of the way, I've done something with Mark.
I really want to point out that Richard Hayes is from Oklahoma. That was my main, you know, like, so Okie's really helping out. And he also plays a mean Buddy Holly. I've seen it in person. No, sorry, go ahead, Bud.
No, Leroy, when I saw your book, I was psyched because I've really grown to love Mark myself. And when I teach, you know, one thing great about it is, like you said, there's something to be said for reading a book in its entirety. And even with our shorter attention spans, I can assign Mark as a whole and give students sort of like that exposure to reading, you know, the fullness of a book. But one thing that jumps out to my students and that's intrigued me as well is at the very beginning of the gospel and then throughout most of it, the author keeps using the word euthus immediately. And to me, at first, like when I started reading the gospel, I thought maybe that's just kind of a filler in the way that we say like. But I think there, do you see that as signaling a kind of urgency or that's functioning literarily for Mark?
Certainly. You know, every commentator will point out that Mark uses that word immediately, Greek is usus, 41 times in his short gospel. We often miss it in English translations because, you know, it's a bad idea, but for the sake of variety, translators will sometimes translate one Greek word with five different English equivalents, and then you miss what's going on actually in the gospel. So, like, if you're reading Mark, you see, like, at once, or just then, or right away, or suddenly, or immediately, or without delay. It's all the same word in Greek back there, right? Immediately. Mark uses this word because he's writing an intense gospel. I mean, Mark is the gospel. It's kind of like the movie Gladiator. It grabs you by the throat and doesn't let you go. You know, immediately the fever left her, and immediately she was healed from her disease, and immediately they left their nets and followed him, and immediately, and bang, 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 bang. You got to catch your breath reading Mark if you're reading it rightly, and it doesn't want to let you catch your breath. I mean, Jesus and Mark is leading a, you know, leading a holy spiritual war to liberate the cosmos from domination by Satan. And that's the kind of thing that's, you know, just kind of demands a certain level of intensity.
Well, so Leroy, this idea, right, about the sort of muscular pace of Mark, and that even we start thinking about all four of the Gospels, that they have a character, right, that they're not just sort of like four reports of events or sort of like sterile documentary evidence, starts to show something that you really point out at the beginning of your book, that we've ran out of, we've depleted our imaginative sources to read or appreciate the Gospels well. I think at one point you talk about the Gospels in many ways need to be read iconographically, that they're sort of verbal icons, that they're painting pictures. So, you know, what do you have to do when you teach students to get them past reading the Gospels, especially Mark, as sterile evidence and more into this verbal iconographic way? And what do you think is sort of the biggest hurdle preventing a lot of your students from reading Mark in this powerful way that you provide in your book?
Okay, so the hurdles are these. First of all, you know, we've taught people to read the Bible piecemeal, right? And the second is we've taught them to read the Bible looking for simple moral instruction or keys to victorious Christian living or something, you know.
Right.
You know, simple little takeaways. You know, so with regard to the first, the Bible was divided into the chapters and verses we have in 1560, right? 1560 in something called the Geneva Bible, an English language Bible published in Geneva for Protestants, English-speaking Protestants. And, you know, that's okay. It's nice to have chapters and verses for reference and to find your place. But what it does, when you have verses in the text, it makes readers kind of think of each verse as like a self-contained unit of truth. Mm. And so, you know, kids memorize Bible verses. Okay, fine. It's not a bad place to start. But for most of us, that's where we end. Mm. And, you know, the Gospels need to be read as stories. And so I try to have my students read them as stories from beginning to end. You know, sit down, you can read Mark in a couple hours, depending on how fast you read. The other thing is morality, right? Since the Enlightenment, 1617, 1800s, you know, every other way of reading Scripture went away because the Enlightenment really stopped believing in a serious, robust metaphysics. So we lose allegory, we lose anagogy, you know, the spiritual sense that brings you to heaven. We kind of reduce the literal sense to history, and, you know, what's left over is like morality, the tropological sense. You know, so we've kind of went from four senses down to one and a half senses. You know, the Enlightenment thinks everything's all about ethics, and so Jesus gets promoted as a great ethical teacher, and we teach people to read the Bible looking for, you know, kind of how to live their lives. And there's so much more to that. So we talk about, you know, how the Gospels are, well, we talk about genre, right? You know, they're stories, they're narratives, they are probably ancient biography, not modern, but ancient biography. And, you know, then revealing Jesus Christ, who's the image of the invisible God, they themselves, I think, are iconic, right? So when you look at a formal icon, I'm looking at one right now on the far side, on the wall, the far side of my office, Christ the Teacher. You know, they're not photographs, they're not portraits, they're not even, paintings like you'd imagine from prior centuries, but icons are meant to reveal heaven to you. That's why they're stylized how they are. That's why they seem sometimes out of proportion. Everything's heavily symbolic, trying to communicate heaven to you. In icons, for instance, you know, saints' eyes kind of look vacant. Why is that? It's because they're not looking at you. Their eyes are actually fixed on God in heaven, you know. And I think in the Gospels, especially Mark, the writers are kind of writing these verbal icons with their stories. The stories within the stories of the Gospels are heavily stylized to reveal the significance of Jesus to you, to communicate not so much what he did, you know, 2,000 years ago, but more who he is in heaven right now. So you can't read the Gospels apart from realizing that Jesus is the incarnate God on earth. And that affects how the Gospel writers compose their narratives, compose their stories.
Yeah, I just think about what you're talking about with verses. If you read a more modern New Testament translation, usually by one person, like I'm thinking of Richard Lattimore, I like his, but you know, David Bentley Hart makes one. There's these ones where it's like a scholar like does these translations. They almost always never use verse. And even looking at the page, you start to just kind of feel that the gospel story is different when it lacks the verses. So I think that's a powerful way for people to think about that, is that if they get a chance to see a gospel literally without the verse numbers, it starts to, like you said, transmit even just, you know, visually something else that's going on. I also think in an auditory way, right, when we hear the gospels, I think most of us hear them sort of spoken, you know, at mass with this like sort of elevated way, and it kind of strikes people as I don't know, they might not be used to it. Maybe it doesn't sound like a story. Of course, that all used to be chanted, which would put the story in a sort of different way. But I'd even throw out that if people have the chance, and maybe Leroy, you know who I'm talking about, but there's someone who quite famously has recorded himself reading dramatically the entire book of Mark, and last I knew it was on YouTube. But he reads.
There's
it.
A couple now. There's an older one, and I want to say it's through Alec Guinness, actually, but I could be wrong about that.
And that to
Obi-Wan
me is
Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah,
I could be wrong about that. Yeah.
Go see if Obi-Wan Kenobi read Mark, and it will change you the way you think of it just to hear someone read it like that. So sorry, Bud, I interrupted. Go ahead.
No, it's okay. So Leroy, when we actually encounter Christ in the Gospel of Mark, As we've already kind of talked about, there seems to be a martial element that Jesus is waging war against, you know, demons. There's also some prominent healings in the first part of the narrative. I know, like, some have pointed out that miracles maybe function or have like a different sort of nuance in each of the Gospels. How do the miracles, what's the significance in the Gospel of Mark? How are they functioning there?
Miracles in Mark? Sure.
Yeah, miracles. The miracles that Christ performs.
Yeah, you know, a lot of times, you know, people think miracles are simply probative, meaning they're almost like magic tricks to prove something. And, you know, when someone works a miracle, you know, it does prove something. So that's not wrong, but they're more than that. When you see Jesus working miracles in the Gospels, especially in Mark, they're signs of the kingdom. I mean, the kingdom is, you know, God's reign through Jesus that's going to be perfect at the end of time. You know, we pray thy kingdom come. But, you know, we're not there yet, and the world is still being liberated from Satan's domination. When you see a miracle, then, of exorcism or healing or raising somebody from the dead, you know, they're signs that this is how it's going to be in the kingdom of God at the end of time, right? Satan and his demons will be banished and destroyed. There will be no sickness there. There will be no death there. Say the feeding of the 4,000 or 5,000, there will be plenty of nourishment there, be it spiritual. You know, so it's more like signs. You know, it's not simply healing or exercising somebody on the spot purely for their own sake. And you might ask, why didn't Jesus just set up a, you know, like a MASH tent, like a medical tent, and just run everybody through it all the time and just fix everybody and then go home? You know, he works miracles not just out of mercy towards individuals, but also to, you know, reveal to everybody down through the ages the nature of the kingdom.
Well, Leroy, we're coming up on the break here pretty soon. We've got about 3 or so minutes. But I think that that's a good jumping off point into how your book relates to, you know, the dominant themes of our show. When it starts, when it comes to thinking about how the gospel is more than, like you said, just like moralizing, it's of course not that you're saying that the gospels don't teach ethics, absolutely not. But there's a way in which if you take the verse individually, if you take snippets individually, and you think that it's an individual, you know, nugget of information intended for individuals, you can start to see how paltry the whole enterprise seems. But what I think you're getting at, right, of course, is that Mark, in many ways, when he's doing the miracle, how he talks about Jesus doing the miracles, how he has the whole narrative laid out, that there's a reality, a community, that we have a glance into how Jesus is, so to speak, taking back conquered territory from the devil. And I guess briefly before the break, and then we'll get into it after the break, is that something that seems alien to most students when you talk to them? Is there, it's hard for them to get out of a sort of individualistic read of something like the Book of Mark?
Well, they're new to it, but it's not hard for them, because I'd like to think I do a pretty good job, you know, showing them the beauty and brilliance, you know, of reading the Gospels as stories in a coherent way. When I do this for adult audiences, you know, either in adult education or diaconate training or something, you know, the scales really fall from people's eyes, and they see the brilliance. I mean, in some ways, you know, it's what most of us who have been blessed to have advanced training, you know, in the Gospels simply do. You know, we've learned how to outline Gospels. And when you do that, you know, outlining is simply taking note of the contours of the story. You know, so this, you know, this isn't hocus pocus or anything really elevated. It's just like the recognition that this is a whole story. Here's the shape of it. Now, what does the whole mean for the parts? You know, so people appreciate that, and they get their eyes opened. And, you know, with Mark, again, he has so many fascinating things that it's kind of mind-blowing.
Well, we're getting ready to go up on the break. When we get back with Leroy, like I said, he has his new book out, Loosening the Lion, and we're talking about the Book of Mark and everything like that. When we get back, we'll dive deep into hopefully asking Leroy for some of these specifics about some of his favorite parts that demonstrate the brilliance of the Book of Mark that people sometimes overlook. And if you have any questions, remember you can always text us at 515-223-1150. 515-223-1150 if you have any questions for Dr. Leroy Huizenga. This is Bo Bonner with Bud Maher and The Uncommon Good. We'll be back after these messages. Just to remind everybody that coming up very soon, just in a few days, we have our dinner in December. That's Friday, December 7th, 2018, at Embassy Suite, 6:30 cocktail hour, 7:15 dinner, and then 8 p.m. keynote speaker, Dr. Ray Guarindi of EWTN's The Doctors Is In, Catholic father of 10, clinical psychologist, author, professional speaker, on national radio and television host. He's given over 3,000 talks on topics including parenting, marriage, family, and the Catholic faith. If you would like to go or RSVP, call 515-223-1150. And also you can RSVP at iowacatholicradio.com/events. So one more time, iowacatholicradio.com/events, 515-223-1150. And we always want to invite you to join our social media, Iowa Catholic Radio on Facebook, at IA Catholic Radio on Twitter. And that's a good way to keep in touch with everything we have cooking up for you here in the Diocese of Des Moines. This is The Uncommon Good. We'll be back after this.
Food, water, and sanitation are basic necessities of life and a daily struggle for millions of children in South Africa like Karibo. Blessman International works to provide basic necessities to these children. Karibo is 9 years old. She must walk a mile to get water to drink. She walks further to take a liter of water to school each day for the school cook to prepare lunch for her and her fellow schoolmates. Blessman International helps provide the basic necessities of life for the children in Limpopo, South Africa. Learn more at blessmaninternational.org.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray Guarendi here from EWTN's The Doctor Is In. Good Lord permitting, I will be joining Iowa Catholic Radio for their dinner in December, Friday, December 7th at the Embassy Suites downtown. And if you pay a little extra, I might even share a parenting tip or two. They won't be very good. I have to see how much you paid. Iowa Catholic Radio's dinner in December is Friday, December 7th at the Embassy Suites downtown. Find more information about tickets at iowacatholicradio.com or 515-223-1150. Hope to see you.
Support for The Uncommon Good is provided by Cartridge World. Cartridge World is an industry leader delivering high-performance printing products that help you save time, money, and print great.
Perfect for businesses, home offices, college students, or busy moms trying to find affordable printing supplies including ink, toner, paper, or printers. For business customers, pickup and delivery are available. Products are guaranteed or full replacement.
Cartridge World, your low-cost, environmentally friendly printing experts. 801 73rd Street in Windsor Heights, 515-564-7400, and online at cartridgeworld.com.
Is it time for a new roof? Then it could be time for you to get to know Bell Construction. Bell Construction is a roofing company entering its 30th year of business. They specialize in residential re-roofs, light commercial jobs, and have the experience to meet all of your roofing needs with personal service. With Bell Construction, the owner will come to your home or place of business in person to inspect and ensure the quality of work that you deserve. They pride themselves in working with you on a personal basis and making sure you are satisfied. Bell Construction, 515-963-4494.
Back with The Uncommon Good. Bo Bonner, Dr. Bud Marr. Today our guest is Dr. Leroy Huizenga, Associate Professor of Theology, Administrative Chair of Human and Divine Sciences at University of Mary in Bismarck, North Dakota. He is the author of the new book, Loosing the Lion, Proclaiming the Gospel of Mark. Leroy, thank you for coming on the show again.
Yeah, well, thanks again for having me.
So, Leroy, one of the things that I think it's important to let people know is you are maybe the chief fan of the University of Mary, their new hockey team, which is doing fantastic, right? Like, isn't this their first season, and they're just tearing it up?
Yeah, we have we started hockey this year, ACHA hockey. You know, it's some people call it club, but it's really competitive. About 400 teams competing for a championship, and we, our record is something like 27-2-2, right? We've basically destroyed everybody, and the teams we've lost to have been either the national champions or semifinalists, and we also took a game from each of those teams that beat us. So we're not allowed to compete for a championship in our first year of competitions, which is too bad because we'd actually make a run at it this year, but there's always next year.
Well, the reason I bring this up is you very much are a son of North Dakota, and I know that you love hockey, and I think there's an element of hockey to your book. And the reason I bring what I mean is the real attention paid to the sort of swiftness and the elegance, but also sort of like the toughness of the Book of Mark. I know that I'm really straining this metaphor, but I think it's apt. When people think of Gospels, or they think of like learning about their faith, there's a way in which they fall into a trap of thinking that it's boring. I think you do a fantastic job of pointing out that whatever you might say of the Book of Mark, boring is certainly not something that you would point out. What's your favorite way of beginning to get people to shift and understand this sort of swift muscularity of the Book of Mark?
Yeah, so if it helps, I mean, a person can understand Mark by understanding that, you know, Jesus goes hockey on sin, death, hell, and the devil, right?
I like it.
Yeah, Jesus goes hockey on sin, death, hell, and the devil. Most people, you know, in the West, and, you know, you could tell me more when we lose it, but, you know, we've really lost a sense of spiritual combat that, you know, has been part and parcel of historic Christianity you know, forever. You know, the East doesn't seem to have lost it, but in the West, it, you know, it kind of disappears. It's here and there, you know. But in the early church, they had a model of salvation called Christus Victor, Christ the Conqueror, right? Trampling down death by death, you know, is one of the phrases that early liturgies would use for what Christ did. You know, so in the West, we often think about the cross, you know, as, you know, Jesus paying the penalty for us and releasing us from guilt, right? And then his resurrection just kind of proves that he was right after all. You know, we're big on trying to prove things. You know, but actually, another way of conceiving of the issue is to see, you know, the cosmos, the world, and us in it held hostage, right, by sin, death, hell, and the devil. You know, and in Mark, Jesus says, you know, that he, the Son of Man, has come to give his life as a ransom for many. A ransom, right? Well, what do you do for a ransom? Or why do you have a ransom? You're liberating somebody from captivity. You know, so historically, we're oppressed and held hostage, and then God comes to earth in Jesus to destroy sin, death, hell, and the devil, and to liberate us and the whole cosmos from that satanic bondage. I think, you know, when people have this explained to them, it actually resonates. I mean, morality, you know, Enlightenment-style reality, like, you know, be a good person. It's so boring. You know, it's like middle class. As long as you don't commit a felony, you're a good person. Oh, come on. That's so tedious. You know, whereas, you know, men in particular, you know, I think we appreciate a spirituality of divine combat, if you will, a spirituality of going hockey. You know, not to be aggressive or hyper-masculine in all those unhealthy ways that we see too much of. You know, the church isn't Fight Club. yeah. Right? You know, but, you know, the catechism talks about, you know, baptism being a call to arms, you know, the Christian life being a battle. You know, you go to war with yourself, you're trying to grow in virtue and eliminate vice under grace. You go to war with the powers, sin, death, hell, and the devil. You know, and the greatest of our saints have recognized that the spiritual life is, you know, akin to combat, to a battle, or even an athletic contest. You know, the early Desert Fathers were known as the Athletes Dei, the athletes of God. You know, because like wrestlers, they were competing, you know, against sin, death, hell, and the devil, and their spirituality was training for those contests. So I don't know. That, when I've taught these things, it really seems to resonate with people. I mean, we've made Christianity boring through moralism. You know, Pope Benedict was right about that. Pope Francis is right about that. You know, obviously morality matters, but it's, if the morality of Christianity is not this boring middle class, be nice to each other morality, and it's certainly not the only thing in Christianity. It's, you know, it's of a piece with the broader picture.
Leroy, when I teach the book, before I give my spiel to students, one, if I open the floor to questions, like one thing that inevitably comes up is, you know, sometimes when Jesus does healings or someone seems to be like on the path to a full knowledge of who he is, he'll tell them like, you know, don't tell anyone, or he'll silence even demons who, you know, confess him to be the Christ. What's with this theme of secrecy that's thread throughout Mark's gospel?
Yeah. So the secrecy thing is interesting. Cause Jesus is often telling people to just basically shut up, right? Maybe not in such stark language. Like, he heals the leper at the end of chapter 1 and says, you know, don't tell anybody. Just go show yourself to the priest and offer the sacrifice Moses commanded. But, you know, the leper went out and spread it abroad so that Jesus couldn't, you know, enter a town openly. You know, basically he had to run away to the hills and people still found him everywhere. It's like Jesus Christ Superstar, right?
Right.
So historically, some scholars have said, well, Mark invents this messianic secret because Jesus, everybody knew he really wasn't the Messiah, and he never claimed to be the Messiah. But the church somehow,
came to believe he was the Messiah, in spite of Jesus never thinking that or teaching that. And so they write it back into, they retroject it back into Jesus' words, but make it a secret teaching to kind of explain why nobody knew Jesus thought he was the Messiah. And I'm like, you Germans are too smart for your own good here. You know, mein Gott, Fritz. You know, was machst du denn? Das ist unglaublich. It's just like, you know, what are you guys thinking? You know, I mean, I get German beer is pure and all that, but it's a little too strong these days. It just doesn't make sense, the gymnastics that some scholarship does, to say like, yeah, the Gospels say this, but really the real Jesus was 180 degrees opposite. I'm like, isn't it easier to say that there's some continuity here? Mm. Yeah, so what's actually going on with secrecy in Mark is that it's a literary device, not a historical thing. Again, Mark is this beautiful story of irony, and I'm going to have to give it away. But so throughout Mark, you know, Jesus tells people and demons to be quiet. But then at the very end of the gospel, the women come to the empty tomb. And finally, right, someone's told to actually speak, the young man at the empty tomb, right? He's not an angel, but he's an angelic figure. You know, he's a heavenly figure. He's in a white robe like the saints, sitting at the right side of the tomb. You know, right is good in the Bible, left is not so good. You know, sheep and goats, that sort of thing. And this young man tells the women, go tell his disciples and Peter. He goes ahead of you to Galilee. There you will see him. And then Mark's gospel at 16:8, originally its original ending, just simply has this, but the women said nothing to anyone for they were afraid. And there it ends. You know, so you get this ironic thing. All through the gospel, Jesus is like, shut up, and people speak. And then at the very end of the gospel, Jesus' representative says, speak, and the women shut up. It's like, what? And the reason Mark does that is to complete the theme of discipleship failure. In Mark, everybody fails. Everybody fails. The disciples have fallen away, right? I mean, Mark portrays them as, you know, dull and dense and dumb. And then finally, you know, he brings into the story this group of women. Oh, maybe they'll prove faithful, you know, and they don't. They said nothing to anyone for they were afraid. What Mark is doing is showing that, you know, God is faithful when every single human being isn't, right? It's this beautiful thing that just like reveals to us our own weakness and our own failings. And in a way, it's okay, you know, because, you know, God is faithful even when we're not.
You know, the irony thing, I think about with your book too, right? You bring up Flannery O'Connor, which is always good news to me. And I know what you're bringing up, right, is that there's sort of two things clashing in Mark all the time, whether it's the messianic secret, whether it's, like you said, the kingdoms in conflict, as you have one of your chapters named. There's this idea of expectation and the sort of way in which reality outstrips expectations a thousandfold. And it seems to me that, like, you're right. Like, we'd almost be better served to read, like, Flannery O'Connor's short story, Revelation, or I don't know if I can out and out recommend it, but a movie that's in that spirit, like Three Billboards Outside of Ebbing, Missouri, right, that it's the sort of Southern grotesque that shows what people think they're about to see, and then to see it radically shifted around, turned around, the rug pulled from underneath them, is good training to understand the way Mark uses irony to show the surprising ways in which God's power works through. And I would think that for, you know, a show talking about the uncommon good, that both of those things are important. On one hand, we live in the time, like you said, of this kingdom conflict, the kingdom of the devil and the various ways that he reigns now. But then this new kingdom conquering, as you said, Jesus Christ's kingdom. But that we always have to remember how surprising it is. And not that like it's like a neat surprise, like it's jaw-dropping surprise. And that's what sometimes, that's what I think that moralism you're talking about, it's almost like it's trying to push back into the package the surprises that Mark has But like once, and maybe this is like what you're getting at with your book title, once we let Mark out of the box, there's no putting the gospel story back in.
Yep, that's great.
Oh, well, sorry. I was trying to like alley-oop to other things, I suppose.
Kind of along with those themes, like Leroy on a show about the uncommon good. So you've already indicated that when Jesus like sets this moral vision for his followers, it's not simply like middle class morality, eat your vegetables, pay your taxes or whatnot. I think, a lot of young people can recognize the kind of radicality to Christ's message. I'll be honest, like I puzzle over exactly how we work that all out. So, you, Bo, and I were all at Duke, and there was this idea that like central to Jesus' message was that he was a pacifist, and like really his going to the cross was disarming the powers and principalities. Sometimes that can be translated in this key that like Jesus is sort of a revolutionary, and as his followers, like we just I wouldn't call it like a complete extraction from the world, but we sort of like have a total non-participation in government and things like that. How would you kind of, drawing on the Gospel of Mark, but all the Gospels, like I know it's a very complex topic, but how does Christ like sort of set the stage for Christians relating, like being in the world and relating to the powers that are out there?
Yeah, that's a great question. So Mark is all about the advancing of the kingdom of God.
Yep.
And I don't think, Mark at least, would insist that Christians withdraw from everything. You can make arguments for that maybe out of other parts of the New Testament. I think it's best to think about it like this, right? We have this debate in theology and in church circles. Is the kingdom of God something God does alone? Is it something, we do in, imitation of God or following, Christ's commands? Or some mix of both. And really, in line with the Catholic theology of cooperative grace, God is always prior, and so the kingdom is his doing, his job, but then we cooperate, to advance the kingdom and kind of follow God's lead. Further, historically, the kingdom and the church have been very closely identified. It's the church that preaches the gospel. It's the church, as Christ's body on earth, that can be the only thing that's going to advance the kingdom. So the little things we do, from serving in a soup kitchen to the kind of scary stuff, your diocesan exorcist doing exorcisms, that's continuing, Jesus' very real work in the world of kind of building and advancing the kingdom. So I think, that's the best way to think about it. And I think for some of us, advancing the kingdom, might mean serving in public office in some way. To do good works, through good administration of government or something like that. And of course, if you're going to do that, you can never compromise your principles. You can't be a proportionalist or a consequentialist. It might come to a point where you have to resign an office or something, but God means to take over the world. The kingdom is going to consummate and it rules over all the kingdoms of the world. And along the way, we're called all sorts of different ways to serve to make that happen.
Well, Leroy, like that would be the we're ending up here at the end of the interview, but I guess that's the last thing I'd throw out. So the big temptation, it seems to me, is people will either read your book or hear you talk about it, and they'll be on fire. They'll be a surprise. They'll fall in love with this story. They'll be amped up. They'll be apocalyptic, and then they have to like wake up the next day and go work at like Costco or, behind a desk. How do we let the lion loose, but then also, live in the world that seems like there's no room for lions?
That's a good question. The secret here is secrecy. When in the Gospel of Mark, Jesus has this emphasis on secrecy,
You know, he tells parables like the mustard seed, you know, the tiniest of seeds. You know, you get a sense that sometimes the kingdom is hidden. I think, you know, part of our spiritual discipline, you know, that St. Mark and Jesus through St. Mark would have us do is, like, learn to see the kingdom sprouting in little things, you know, in the quotidian, the day-to-day. And it also, you know, we kind of have to maintain our own spiritual vibrancy, if not intensity, you know, even when we're working at, you know, Walmart or something, you know, and we're going to be able to do that if, you know, we're ordered and disciplined in our spiritual life, you know, but if we compartmentalize and get lazy and like, oh, I got to work these 8 hours and then I got to go to Mass on Sunday, no, you know, you're a Christian 24/7, right? You're looking for signs of Christ everywhere. You're looking to advance the kingdom, you know, everywhere.
Well, Leroy, it's been fantastic to get to talk to you. It's been an honor to have you on. Like I said, I don't know what grade you would give our radio interview. I'm sure it would be tough but fair. But no, it's been a long time coming. I'm glad that you got to come on the show. So thank you for coming on The Uncommon Good.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
So Dr. Leroy Huizenga, Associate Professor of Theology, Administrative Chair of Human and Divine Sciences at University of Mary at Bismarck, North Dakota. Folks, you got to get his book, Loosing the Lion, Proclaiming the Gospel of Mark. It's available anywhere that such books are sold, like on Amazon. But you really need to get this. It'd be great Advent reading, and it's not too late to get it shipped to you and read it for Advent. God bless, Leroy.
Yep, you too.
Well, Bud, What grade would you give?
Oh, you know, I'll give you an A- and me a B+.
Oh, that's so noble of you.
You know, I would just throw in there real quick. We can be tempted to like complain about homilies at Mass or whatnot on certain occasions. And I think this book, it picks up on how the Gospel of Mark is proclamation, and then it challenges us to proclamation. So besides Advent reading for yourself, this would be a great stocking stuffer for your favorite priest.
Oh, right, yeah. Like, what a really great passive-aggressive suggestion about how he can preach Mark.
I was trying to give the key, like, less complaining, more concrete. Even great preachers could benefit from this one.
Oh, yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. The only other grade that I want to throw out is we have a new speaker headphone set, and mm-hmm. I think when you and Leroy were talking at one point, it just exploded in this loud, staticky crackle. And so if I was being, like you couldn't understand what I was saying, that was like, because in the middle of the second segment of the show, I couldn't hear very well. So forgive me, but
occasionally like one little blip that I'll notice on the radio is if someone's like Skyping in or maybe on phone, it sounds like their voice will like speed up for a second.
Yeah.
And I think that we're entering like a quark and we're going to like land in medieval times, but
right, or
I'm
it's
always
like,
still in my office.
It's the Matrix, and you're like, yeah. Man, if the Matrix is glitching, it could be cooler, right? That's the problem with the robots taking over, is it's not going to be cool, bud, and the glitches are just going to be annoying.
That's right. We hope for coolness, but it will just be more blasé.
Stinking robots. Well, this is The Uncommon Good. May Jesus Christ, the Prince of Peace, reign in our hearts, in our families, in our city, our state, our nation, the world, the solar system, the galaxy, the whole kit and caboodle. This is The Uncommon Good. We'll be back next week.
And the great thing about Iowa Catholic Radio is that you can sort of bathe your life in prayer and, you know, enter quite easily into like a deeper spirituality. So here at the radio, we pray the rosary at 5:30 and 9:30 a.m. You can end your day with the rosary at 9:30 p.m., followed by a gospel reflection by Father Andrew Winchettle.
And as always, the ministry here that we do is not just the people on the show, not the people behind the deck, or even the people in the offices. It's you as well. And so if you can remember us this Advent season, we would appreciate not only your prayers, but also your donations so that we can keep up this wonderful service, especially through the holiday seasons when people are most yearning for the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ. If you need anything else, of course, visit us on social media. You can sign up for our email as well, so twice a month. Get events that are coming your way and be a part of the wonderful things going on at this station. So, The Uncommon Good. Bud, have a good week. I hope the snow is wonderful and joyous and a winter wonderland and not Snowmageddon out there.
Blessings.
Yep. God blesses the uncommon good. We'll be back next week.
The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher is heard every week on wonderful Catholic stations like this one and anytime on podcast. Just search for The Uncommon Good.